The Living Clean podcast is not affiliated with Narcotics Anonymous, nor do we speak on behalf of NA as a whole. We are simply members sharing our personal experiences and perspectives in recovery-based discussions. The opinions expressed here are our own and not those of Narcotics Anonymous as a fellowship. This is the Living Clean podcast. This podcast is not meant to replace meetings, sponsorship, step work, or service. This podcast is meant to be another tool in your recovery toolbox. Our guests are here to share their experience, strength, and hope with recovery through Narcotics Anonymous. Thank you for joining us. All right, welcome back to the Living Clean podcast. I'm Mason S. I'm an addict. You know, it's always a great, or you're getting ready for a great episode when we have to start off with a disclaimer, but we're going to start off with one tonight. And here it goes. The topics being discussed in this particular podcast can be a hot topic for some. We are not speaking for NA as a whole, and we are not the authority on these topics. We are simply exploring the subject in hopes of providing valuable content and to bring more awareness to this IDT that is active during the current WSC cycle. And now we're going to get into our introductions, and then we'll talk more about what all that means here in just a second. So I'm going to kick it over to our co-host first.
My name is Francis. I'm an addict. My clean date is December 22nd, 1992. My home group is You Are the Book Book Study. We meet on Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 6:30 a.m. in beautiful Chico, California.
Thank you, Francis. And the guy who is helping us quarterback this whole thing tonight, I'm going to kick it over to Chris.
I'm an addict named Chris. My clean date is October 13th, 2012. My home group is the Serenity on Sunday group of NA. We meet on Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. We're a Living Clean study group, and that's in Westminster, Maryland, and that's in the northwest area of the Free State region.
Welcome to the show, Chris. Glad to have you, brother.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Okay, next, returning for the umpteenth time, Chase P.
Yeah, I'm Chase. I'm an addict. Clean date, February 10th of 2020. Home group is the Dark Side of the Moon group in Homewell, Tennessee.
Welcome back, Chase.
Glad to be here.
Next is RJ.
Addict named RJ. Clean date is 7/12/2012. Home group is By the Grace of NA in Baltimore, Maryland, Northeast Freedom Area.
Welcome to the show, RJ.
Thank you.
Last but certainly not least, Jason.
I'm Jason, an addict. Clean date is February 17, 2021, and I don't currently have a home group.
Welcome, Jason. So tonight, we've decided to do something a little different. This was actually an idea that Francis had, a topic that we wanted to introduce to the podcast format, because these are kind of the hot topics in the fellowship. This is one of the hot topics in the fellowship, one of three, I believe. So tonight we're going to talk about DRT MAT as it relates to NA. So these are these IDTs, which stands for issue discussion topics, I believe. That is, these are being discussed all over the fellowship, worldwide, and there's been workshops going on ever since these were introduced. And so Francis had the great idea about, well, let's have something similar to one of those workshops and on the podcast, and hopefully get some more awareness and some of that out to the fellowship. So we're going to try this tonight, and I'm going to just turn it over to my man, Chris, who's going to kind of quarterback this thing, and we'll go from there. Chris.
Thanks, Mason. Yeah, so we're going to go through some of the material that's available to anybody in doing these workshops. So sometimes these workshops are held at conventions or learning days or different things like that. I know there's a couple of people on right now that have been to some of these. So we're going right through the material that's out there that anybody can use to explore this topic. So we'll jump right into it. So we've been having conversations around drug replacement therapy or medication-assisted treatment, DRT or MAT, for decades. We've written about the issues in times of illness, NA groups and medication, and the PR pamphlet, NA persons receiving medication-assisted treatment. The fellowship has been surveyed on what to say in a piece of recovery literature about the topic, and that survey made it clear that we don't have a unified fellowship position on this issue. Three previous issue discussion topics have been at least partially devoted to the topic. Many groups still struggle with how to respond to addicts who arrive at our doors on medication-assisted treatment, and so the discussion continues. It's important that we have these conversations because it's not going away. Medication is part of treatment in and out of corrections more and more of the time. Many people who come in on some kind of DRT or MAT are mandated by treatment or corrections that may require medication as part of their compliance. Whatever our individual feelings are about this subject, we exist in a larger world and its approach to addiction has changed. We need to consider how we carry the message in the world we live in, not the world we might wish for. How do we build a common bond when almost every door to NA has medication built into its frame? Many people outside NA, for many people outside NA, the lie is not dead. There's a prevailing belief that the only hope for the addict is long-term treatment with medication. As an organization, we don't endorse or oppose other approaches to recovery, even when it's tempting. That means we set aside any feelings we may have about the treatment industry when welcoming the newcomer. This workshop isn't about focusing on entities outside of NA. It's about actively encouraging a dialogue about how we can further our primary purpose. It is our job to make sure that recovery is available to anyone who wants it and that it's attractive to those who need it. The reality is NA's reputation affects our ability to carry the message. Most of our members first find NA through treatment or drug courts. If professionals are unwilling to refer people to NA, some addicts may never find us. No matter how people find NA, what makes them stay seems clear. Our most recent membership survey said that 82% stayed in NA because of identification with other members, and 68% said their first meeting was important or very important. This session is about building on those strengths and helping people to find a sense of belonging and take root in NA. Where we have consensus is a fellowship. Our message is hope and the promise of freedom. We are a program of complete abstinence. It doesn't matter what or how much you use. What we care about is what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using. We want people to be able to choose any membership no matter how they get here. We want NA to be a safe place to recover. And then that brings us to our first discussion question that we have. And that is there anyone here who has experience coming into NA on medication to treat addiction and now living drug-free? Would you be willing to share a few thoughts on your experience? So if anybody would wants to share, you can raise your hand. I'll call on you. Go ahead, RJ.
Acne more, Jay. So I did come in on MATs. I was on Suboxone for, I guess, about a year and a half when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. And when I got introduced to NA, I was already on MATs. You know what I mean? So I didn't have any prior experience. And basically, what you were talking about in what you were just reading about how a lot of addicts now are mandated to take these drugs or whatever when they go into treatment, like that was the case for me. I went in with an opiate addiction, and basically they're like, this is the way our treatment plan works. I was doing an IOP program, so it wasn't inpatient, it was outpatient. And they're like, in order for you to be in our program, you have to take this. Now, you have to understand at the time I was dope sick, and like anything that you put in front of me, like I'm willing to take it. You know what I mean? And especially if you tell me that's going to make me feel better. So, I jumped that right at that. And, so I, when I find, and they told me to go to Narcotics Anonymous. So this was probably back in 2010, right? So like Suboxone like was talked about, but it wasn't really like a lot of people like getting off of it or staying clean from it or any of that kind of stuff. It was kind of just like the beginning forming of it. And when I came into meetings, like, dude, to be honest with you, like I need to be, and this is honest forum, right? So like when I came into meetings, man, like I heard people trashing it, you know what I mean? And like I remember sitting in a meeting that was ultimately became my home group. And listening to a guy share super negatively about it and, you know, remembering how that made me feel on the inside, right? And lucky for me, like I stuck around long enough and like pretty much took the message, not the messenger kind of thing, and stayed long enough for that fog to kind of lift and like was able to get off of MATs. And like it was like a struggle and everything, you know? But like I definitely think it's something that needs to be talked about. You know what I mean? I think it's one of those things that like you just can't brush under the rug anymore. You know, it's too much exposure out there. There's too many people coming into it. Like there is footing for like the science behind it that it actually does work. And you know, that's neither here nor there with Narcotics Anonymous. But the fact of the matter is, and like Chris, I've told you this before, is that like if we think that we can share life-saving information in our Cox Namas meetings, the opposite is 100% true, you know? And we as addicts, you know, want to make people feel included. This is an inclusive program, you know what I mean? Like we want to make people feel included in everything. So like I don't know. Like I know my experience from coming in, being on it, hearing people talk about it, you know, and I ultimately got off of it and everything. But it definitely made me feel some type of way when I heard people talk about it. So
Awesome. Thank you, RJ.
yeah.
Jason's up next.
Yeah, so when I came into NA, I was on Suboxone, and like at first I had no idea that that was even something that was an issue in NA, because I was put on Suboxone in treatment, and no one told me that that was something that was controversial or anything. And in fact, the first person that told me was Francis, because I was a newcomer. I was talking to him, and he asked me if I had many cravings, and I was like, no, I don't have a whole lot of cravings because I'm on Suboxone. And he was like, well, I'd be careful sharing about that in meetings, because some people are going to judge you about it, and so I was careful, and I didn't share it really with other people in NA. I didn't really talk about it. I was on it for like the first 6 months I was in NA. So I didn't like just go off it right away once I heard it wasn't acceptable, like I or not acceptable, but not supported necessarily in NA. And so what I did was I tapered off it. And I was planning on tapering off it anyway, because I didn't want to take it long term. But like that kind of gave me, knowing that it wasn't necessarily the most acceptable thing in NA, gave me like another push maybe to make sure that I tapered off of it. And so it's I work in treatment too, and so it's something that like it's a topic that I think about a lot, because it's, you know, like, should I tell this guy to go to NA that's on medication assisted treatment if he's going to get judgment there for being on medication-assisted treatment? It's also not safe for him to just go off however many milligrams of methadone that he's on, you know? But yeah, that's kind of my experience coming in. I got off it. I had a sponsor that allowed me to work steps while I was on it. I know some sponsors are against that, but I think the process of actually working the steps while I was on Suboxone helped me a lot. And kind of made me feel a part of, and you know, I'm glad that I had the sponsor that I did.
Thank you so much, Jason. Thank you both for sharing your experience on that. Francis.
Well, I don't have an experience with taking medication assisted treatment in the early recovery or at all, but what I can say is that, you know, like I'm Jason's sponsor, and so it was kind of like during the pandemic, like when he showed up, we were just getting a hall back, you know, like we were moving from a virtual hall to an in-person hall, Here's this guy that's standing out front of the meeting, like chain smoking. Seemed like all the time. Like some of the time during the meeting, he was chain smoking, and like then he asked me about sponsorship, and I always consider that an honor. But then when he told me he was on Suboxone, I'm like, oh fuck, I don't. Really, I question whether I could sponsor someone on medication-assisted treatment. And like, it feels like I'm always being kind of like tested on my biases around different experiences, and this was just one of them. And I'm like, well, sure, why not? Like, let's give it a shot. And it's turned into a real like a great real like sponsor-sponsee relationship. And like it can he's moved away, and it continues over Zoom. I get to catch up with him when I'm down in the Bay Area. We started a history project. He engaged in helping us, like when we would carpool down there, he hung out and became a part of this history project. But who am I to judge? That's what it comes down to is like I have like these notions that like there are some people that aren't clean in NA, and but then or don't belong in NA, or or like as a guy I can't sponsor women or gay people, or like any of like that weird shit that gets put on me. In the end, like it's just bullshit. Like that, that I buy into, then and in the end, like I have to figure out that it's just my stuff, and I have to get over it. And that's something that happened with Jason. He helped me get over some bullshit that I bought into. So he's sponsoring me in some areas. Thanks.
Thank you, Francis. Mason.
Yeah, so I just want to reflect on something that Jason said that I thought was interesting. He said that finding out that MAT or DRTs were not as accepted in NA kind of I think you said it motivated you to kind of come off of that. And so I'm just wondering, like, what is the fine line between us talking about this not being accepted and then trying to encourage people in a loving way, or is it even our place as members to try and encourage sponsees to get off of medication? Is that even our place? Or is that, and what's our motivation for encouraging them that just because we don't want to? We don't want to participate in something that's not accepted, or is it really what's best for the person? So those are just some questions that ring through my head as we talk about this topic. But that's all I got. I'll sit back and listen.
Thanks, Mason. RJ's got his hand up next. Go ahead, RJ.
Yeah, man, I think you all brought up some good stuff there. I mean, the one thing that always comes to my mind whenever we talk about something like this is where are we coming from? Are we coming from a standpoint of like love, tolerance, acceptance, where we want to see the best for the individual that's on an MAT or whatever the issue is that might be happening in recovery? They can't stop smoking crack. They can't stop shooting heroin. They can't stop sleeping around with women and they're married. Whatever it is, where are we coming from as addicts trying to help this person? And a lot of times, man, like from my story, from like when I was taking it, dude, like I didn't have the same experience that I can't remember. So I'm sorry. I even had the participants up that he
Other
was
than
sharing.
Jason?
Yeah, that
Other than
Jason was
Jason?
sharing.
Yeah.
Like I didn't have that experience, If anything, like we when you said Mason, when you said motivation, like for me, it was guilt and shame. When I heard that other addict sharing in a meeting the way that he did about like people being on Suboxone, he had no idea that I was on it. You know what I mean? Nobody did. Like it was like my second or third meeting ever in Narcotics Anonymous. But like, dude, the message that I got from that is okay, don't talk about that. Don't share that kind of thing. And like honestly, man, like that kept me sick for a long time. So I mean, I really at the end of the day, my honest opinion is like I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to tell anybody to get off of any type of medication. That's between them, their sponsor, and their higher power, right? And their doctor. But at the same time, like We just like I have to come from a standpoint of love, tolerance, acceptance when we talk about this kind of stuff. And that's the bottom line. And if that is what motivates somebody to like want to look into a different area of recovery that they thought was not possible, such as getting off of a DRT or MAT, then that's one thing. But if like I'm coming to a meeting and spewing a bunch of ego and coming from a standpoint of like I've been clean for this many years and I've worked this many steps, and not saying that everybody does that, you know what I mean? I'm making a lot of generalizations. But like when I come from that standpoint, like I truly don't think I'm fulfilling like my higher power's purpose. You know what I mean? And like I can in turn hurt that addict who's just looking for an answer. At the end of the day, we're looking for another day clean. You know what I mean? I feel like sometimes, and like this is more my opinion than anything. I'm not even going to get into it. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
Thank you, RJ. Chase.
Yeah, I'm Chase. I'm an addict. I was kind of messaging Mason. So I got clean in a MAT program, but I did like, it was a short tape. I did like a 3 week taper. And so I was still in treatment, didn't go to my actual meeting till I was off of the medication. And it's crazy how, if you had asked me this question like 4 years ago versus asking me it now, like the answers are vastly different. Like 4 years ago, I could have said, well, just if you want to be in 12-step recovery and take some Suboxone and go to AA, they'll allow you to do that. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal. But that's just because I was saying what I'd heard from other people. I didn't fucking know. I didn't really have an opinion. I was stating others' opinions. And so my mindset today is like completely shifted. Because I was coming to NA meetings while I was still shooting dope at times in my life. And they'd said, what? Keep coming back, right? Like, keep coming back. I heard that over and over and over again. And what would I do? I would disappear and then keep coming back till I finally stuck. And so if somebody has, a desire to stay clean, a desire to be in the meeting, why are we going to be so openly hard on somebody who's doing something, trying to help themselves versus the person who's just out there using regularly? And what do we have to be more understanding? I forget how Mason worded it. Like, how do we have to articulate that? Keep coming back. The love. Love them the same way we hug the person who we've seen pick up 17 white key tags this month. Me and Mason have somebody in our life right now that has probably done that. Picked up about 17 white key tags this month, and it's keep coming back. Love you. We'll help you any way you want. Or any way that you want to help yourself, we will help you. And here's the thing. The message in Narcotics Anonymous is clear. If we love on them and they keep coming back, eventually you're going to hear the message. Or, you know what I mean? And it sounds different. My recovery doesn't look like everybody's. Now I do have, and Francis said, getting put in a position to learn a lesson, right? I got back into where I'm working in the recovery field, and I had a pretty stout opinion on Matt. And my first gig, getting back in working as a counselor, said, "Hey, we're getting the Matt program back. You're going to be counseling Matt guys," and that has to support some people wanting to stay on long-term Matt. I was like, "This is fucking bullshit." You know what I mean? But it's my job. And so I learned a way, like in a professional sense, to if that, hey, if this is your plan, this is what you want to do, we're going to set you up the best plan possible to do it. And hell yeah, I'm going to tell them to go to NA meetings when they get out. So they can get told to keep coming back and hear the message that total abstinence, is possible. Because some people are so, it's a fear-based thing. When I would be on mat in the past, like I was scared to death. I was absolutely scared. I thought it was the only way. But yeah, that's three little words, man. Keep coming back,
Thanks so much, Chase. Jason.
Well, I thought I'd share a little bit about how Francis did motivate me. And like, if you notice, I didn't say Francis was my sponsor. I let him do that because like, it's weird for me to even out Francis to be like, oh yeah, Francis sponsored someone on Suboxone. I feel like that's Francis's business if he wants to tell someone about it. Because there is like guilt and shame around it. And what Francis said is like, I want to share about it in the meeting just because you're going to get. But you can always talk to me about it. But he also said that like, I'm not a doctor. Listen to what your doctor says to if you want to get off it, to safely get off it. And then like the only time that I even remember him talking about like in any way encouraging me to get off it is we were talking about reservations. And he was saying like if you decided you need to be on Suboxone for the rest of your life, that might be considered a reservation. That like that's something that you want to stay on, and you don't think that you could do recovery without it. But yeah, I really support everything that was said. And yeah, and then I really agree with RJ that like a lot of the things that I hear outside of like in meetings, but also outside of meetings when people talk about medication assisted treatment, like almost comes from like an ego, like I'm better than they are kind of thing, more so than like how can we best help this person? You know, it's like, oh, they're not really clean, you know, like, oh, we don't listen to what they say because they're not really clean kind of thing. You know, I think everyone deserves to be listened to, and if there's anyone that should be listened to, like, not saying take their advice necessarily, but newcomers need to be listened to because they need to know that's what we're here for, is to listen to them and hear what they're going through.
Awesome. Thank you, Jason. Thank you, everybody. I think there was a lot of really good information, a lot of experience shared there. I think with some of these other discussion questions we're going to get into, we're going to dive even deeper into some of those things that were mentioned. And I just wanted to jump in real quick before we move on, because I do have personal experience with this as well, and maybe more similar to what Chase was describing a little bit with his experience. But there was a point in time when I was using before I got clean, where I kind of hit a little bit of a bottom and I was seeking some relief. And I ended up going to a doctor's office, seeking what I thought, you know, I kind of at the time is like comfort drugs for withdrawal, right? I don't even think I knew anything about maintenance or anything that had to do with that. And what happened was I got put on, I got a prescription for a maintenance drug, which I was on for a period of time. I ended up getting clean in a professional facility through H&I and also through our literature, because actually the basic text was one of the first things that I was exposed to. And part of the reason that I went to that facility that I did was because they told me that I could take my maintenance drugs with me. And I'm like, yeah, you know, at the time, like that was, I had no direction. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no idea where I was going, but I had gotten to a point of enough was enough, and had gotten to some desperation where I was willing to go in a different direction than I had before. Now, what I didn't realize until I got there was they said, you can bring it, you can have it here, but we're going to do a 5-day detox on you, and you're coming off of it. And then we'll give it back to you if you want it when you leave here. So I went through that process, which was very physically uncomfortable, in conjunction with being exposed to the basic text, which I read cover to cover while I was, you know, sick, falling over myself, you know, all that stuff, completely like wanting to crawl out of my skin. One of the only things that would bring me any kind of comfort was reading the basic text and attending the Narcotics Anonymous H&I meetings that were coming in. And that was my first exposure to NA. I didn't know anything about meetings, about recovery. I didn't know that anybody got clean, stayed clean. I didn't even know that that was possible. I definitely didn't think that it was possible for me. So that was my experience. So by the time that I started going to a like regular meeting, a non-H&I meeting, I was already off of the maintenance drug. However, it gave me some perspective, and I have some experience with that. And what that's led me to do today is I actually really enjoy interacting with the newcomers that come in that are on maintenance, you know, and I get to talk to them. And I think Jason kind of spoke to in a way like everybody deserves respect. Right. Everybody deserves to be spoken to respectfully, regardless of how they're coming in, what, you know, what they're on or what they're using or whatever the situation is. Right. Everybody deserves respect. And I've been able to sponsor people that were on maintenance that have then made a decision to get off. And I don't care whether we're talking about maintenance drugs or whatever we're talking about, to see someone come around to NA for a while and really continue to come back to stick and stay, and then make a decision to get clean and pick up a white key tag, there's nothing like that, you know. And I've been able to be there a number of times for people when that's what's going on. I'm really grateful for that. So we'll keep it moving here. We'll go into the next section, and then we've got some more discussion questions to get into. So we're going to talk about how each of us finds a sense of belonging in NA and how we help to cultivate that for each other. We want to consider our own experience of moving from observers to members, and to consider what it took for us to take root in Narcotics Anonymous. The literature tells us that there is no model of the recovering addict, and yet most of us have been challenged in one way or another as we made NA our home. To help focus that discussion, here's some questions to consider, and we're gonna tackle the first one. What were some of the ways you felt your membership was challenged early in your recovery, and what made you stick and stay? And I can share on that a little. Go ahead, Chase.
Oh, Yeah, I'm chasing an addict. Well, I don't know. I would say I got kind of some pushback when getting involved in service early on, because I got involved with some guys who were like basically trying to overhaul the way things had been done and always been done in the group I came into. And so I kind of got lumped in with them, and I got my passion from the way they were doing things. And turns out they were in the right. We didn't always go about it the right way, but we were trying to make sure what we did fell within traditions. And the people who maybe didn't have the understanding or were comfortable with the way things were, they're like, who the fuck are you? You just got here 6 months ago, and you think you can come in here and try to tell us how things could possibly run better? And I was like, it's a joke now, but like a lot of people who were, there weren't a ton of people. Our group was small when I got here, but like the majority of them will say, I did not like him when he got here. And I think part of that was, first off, I was speaking up on things that I thought I knew something about. It was coming from the right place, but they didn't run me out. But it was uncomfortable. There were some conflicts that came along with that. Kind of goes in line with what somebody else was saying, like we need to hear from the newcomer, not just because, that's what we do, but man, sometimes their perspective, we can get so set in our ways that, man, I've heard some profound shit come out of a newcomer's mouth, even at a business meeting. Like, you know what? That sounds like a good idea. Like, we get so lost in all the grand scheme of things, we miss a little simple thing sometimes. And so, I don't know if that kind of ties in with it. That's where my head went and my experience on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chase. Mason.
Yeah, so something very similar, like I can remember the first time really feeling uncomfortable in an NA meeting is being told the way that I should share. I was very much a clean and sober individual when I got here. I know people out there listening are going to find that hard to believe, but yeah, and I even challenged some of the traditions as a newcomer too. Like, is this I think these are bullshit. And and then getting super involved in service, I can remember going to a learning day. I think I had 80 something days clean. I went to a learning day on a no, it was actually a phone line workshop. And we went through the phone line workshop, and they have this portion to where they do like a mock phone call. And I was the addict who was going to be answering the phone call. And so I answer the phone. Somebody else is acting like an addict looking for help. And I go through all the prompts and, I do a great job. Everybody's clapping. Wow, that's great. We get through the phone line workshop. And at the end, they're going to take down your information about how to get you added to the phone line. And so when they were like, we want you to write down your phone number and your email and your clean date. I wrote my clean date down, and it was like 80 days ago. And the person who took my phone number down was like insulted that I had wasted their time all day being the participant who mo did the mock phone call, because I only had 80 days clean, and kind of shamed me about it. Like, you ain't got no business doing this shit. With your 80-day clean ass, that's so that, but I'm a super competitive guy, so I was like, I'll show you. But I could have seen, like, had I not had that sort of competitive spirit and been more, what's the word? Sheltered, I guess, or I'm like, for lack of a better word, I could see where that could really have drove somebody out of the meeting to really feel like not only did you waste our time, what the hell were you thinking because of this amount of clean time? So, and I've dealt with that. I've tried to get positions ever since I got clean that I didn't have the clean time for over and over again, almost as a fuck you to that person that did that. So I've had my clean time waived a bunch of times, and I almost wanted to post to that guy every time I did. I got me another position, asshole. But yeah, just something like that is what came to mind.
Awesome. Thanks, Mason. Francis.
Yeah, something comes to mind from the It Works How and Why. It says that a generous application of compassion is more therapeutic to the suffering addict than a free application of judgment. And so, like we have, I mean, this is just one example. Like the medication-assisted treatment is just one example of like how we judge each other. Mason was talking about clean time, and like I think that a lot of times people, you know, like that don't have a lot of clean time, have plenty of ability to do the position, except for whatever reason, you know, like we got these stupid clean time requirements. You know, like there's sexual identity, you know, like there's just all kinds of different things that we'll judge each other for. And you know, like, and this is just one more thing. And like, so how do we get past our judgment? How do we try to include people into Narcotics Anonymous? Is anonymity is without name, and then it means without self. And then if it's without self, it means that we love each other unconditionally. Like, how do we love each other unconditionally when all we want to do is judge each other when they walk through the door? And so I don't know. You know, like I do my best to like tear down that wall, Mr. Gorbachev. You know, like I want to I want to include everybody. You know, like what and like and I get in my own way a lot of the times. You know, like I like my personality is the problem. So, like I always have work to do, and I'm always being given lessons by people, you know, like when I judge them. So, yeah, keep coming back.
Thanks, Francis. RJ.
Agni Marjig. So I guess I don't need to say that every time. Anyway, so like my recovery is challenging as I walk through the door, you know, like it, with just me sharing my story about being on MATs or whatever and hearing that person share in like my second or third meeting. But I'll tell you what made me stick and stay. The second part of that question was what made you stick and stay? It was the home group. You know what I mean? It was NA that like was really there for me, you know, like the community. And even though I heard this person share, I also, on the other hand, was watching a loving fellowship come together and watch people stay clean a day at a time. You know what I mean? And even when I was so new into recovery and I had no idea about any of that stuff, the way my first home group made me feel, I wish I could give that to every single newcomer that walked through the door. You know what I mean? I felt like I'd finally like I found like that missing puzzle piece. You know what I mean? I found a place for me to fit in with a bunch of people who didn't fit in. And we were all just trying to figure this thing out together. And, you know, later on in my story, my home group became the pivotal role in like allowing me to get off of Suboxone. You know what I mean? Like it allowed me to set that foundation to be able to feel like, hey, man, it's time. You know what I mean? Like this is no longer serving me anymore. This is becoming a reservation. Like it's time for me to like, you know, step forward in my recovery and get off of the MATs. But you know, it was only because of that home group. That's what made me stick and stay, was that camaraderie that I had when I first walked through the door of that first home group, you know. So that's what I got.
Thanks so much, RJ. Mason.
Yeah, I just want to jump in real quick because I didn't say what made me stick and stay. Actually, the first co-host of this podcast played a big part in that, TK, because he informed me he was really interested in the writing of the basic text at the time. And he was like, why don't you go and look at how much clean time some of those guys had and girls had? And when I started to discover that, I was like, yeah, could we imagine if they'd have been told you don't have the clean time? And you know, through the process of this podcast and meeting Francis is, and you know, getting to meet some of those people, they had even less clean time than I remembered. You know, a lot of people involved in that process were brand new. So that was one of the things that made me stick and stay. Just wanted to add that in there.
That's great. Thanks, Mason. And I know when I came in, I think that I felt that my membership was challenged, but I was the one challenging my own membership when I came in, you know, and I know I've heard other people share about that. So I know that I'm not alone with that. It's not an uncommon experience for people to come in and start looking for the differences and try to disqualify themselves from the program. And I think that that's where I was. I came in as a newer person in NA, and I took some suggestions and talked to some people that had some time, but I found myself mostly associating with newer people in the program. And what do a lot of newer people in the program talk about? They talk about old times. They talk about using or what they got into or whatever like that. And I kind of have the kind of story with my using that, I could see at that time that it was bad, but it was like I was questioning if it was bad enough, because I had some things I was looking at. Like I was talking to people, some people who had used longer than I had been alive when I got clean. I talked to some people who had done long stretches of incarceration, and I hadn't been in a jail cell for any longer than about 12 hours. There was a lot of stuff that I could look at, and I was like, questioning whether it was the place for me. But I think two things really helped me out at that time. One, I continued to come back because I had that gift of desperation. And for me, it was like I hear a lot of other people share too. It's like NA was the last house on the block. I had done everything else. I'd been just about everywhere else looking for help or either got pushed into being there. And NA was kind of that last resort for me. And then I kept coming back enough to really learn about the program and learn about our third tradition. And that we don't care about any of that stuff. It's not in the third tradition, but we talk about and we read it at the beginning of just about every meeting. We're not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. I heard that when I was going to meetings, but I had to give myself enough time for that to sink in. And to talk to enough people and have enough experiences in NA to know that I had gone through enough pain to get my seat in NA, and that that's a subjective thing and might be different for everybody, So I had to go through that process with myself and like prove to myself that I belonged in NA and that I qualified for membership. And I'm glad that I did that and that there were other members in the program to help me to do that and encourage me. And then we're right into another discussion question here. So the next one is how do we help people feel rooted and secure in NA?
I just like try to create access for people. Like so I have this little home group where we're doing a book study, and it was born of like helping somebody read. And like so now like we said, let's become a meeting, like, and how do we, what do we do? We decided not to have clean time requirements on our service positions. We also decided not to have like time, like a time commitments, like GSRs can serve for 1 month and they don't have to have the clean time. Let's just send our newcomers there to, and then if they don't want to come back, we'll find somebody else. And then like the secretary of the meeting, we just have a format that people can read and they don't have to have a commitment to be, like to, like you have to do this for 6 months. You could do it from one meeting and then somebody else can do it. It's like, we don't like, we just want to welcome everybody and keep coming back and fuck all those rules. So I know that when I was new, I questioned a lot of stuff. I questioned being too young. And like I had a sponsor that made me read a story in the basic text about a young person. I didn't want God. And they made me read the atheist story, Up From Down Under. So there were stories in the basic text that I, that I could read out of like me thinking I'm disqualifying myself. So now we have these sixth edition stories. The stories, I think they started getting the process going around 2003. The book came out in 2008. And there is a story in the basic text about somebody that came in on MAT and have gotten off of it. Like, as if they knew. Like, this is something that's coming. And, and people are going to struggle with the judgment that we have in Narcotics Anonymous. And so they gathered a lot of stories for people to be able to identify with getting clean in with different challenges. And it's called The Only Requirement. And it's a great story in the basic text. So thanks.
Thank you, Francis. Go ahead and jump in, Jason.
Yeah, I would just say some of the things that have already been said, like love and acceptance and compassion, empathy. Like that's how I feel like we help people be rooted in an A, and just like, you know, like, because I've heard people say like, oh yeah, I won't sponsor someone that's on medication assisted treatment, or I won't, you know, it's like, so for this particular issue, I'd say like, you know, if someone asks you, if someone asks for help, like, you help them, you know, and maybe it looks different than how you sponsor other people, or, but like, I mean, and this kind of answers the last question. Like, what helped me stick and stay was that, like, someone was willing to sponsor me, and that they were willing to like help me with this. And I think working the first three steps helped me get off, you know, like helped me get off Suboxone. Like, I think it like helped me feel secure enough in myself, and that like what I was doing was what I was supposed to be doing to get off of it, you know. So I think, you know, making people feel a part of instead of apart from.
Thank you, Jason. Chase, you're up.
Yeah, I think first things first is the obvious, is you don't try to fuck them, you know. But if make a newcomer feel safe and secure, I'm real big on that. Try to spread that down through my sponsees unsuccessfully. But yeah, that's for me, that's the first, you know, that's the main thing, because what do you see run people out of the room, you know, more times than not, like that's the way that normally ends. Or you get married to him and you wind up living in Homewall, Tennessee, where you never heard of before you came here. That's the other option. But I think a big thing about it is just consistency. You know, it's the reason we open up at the same time. It's the way the meeting formats are the same. I think for me personally, like where I came from in active addiction, like it was up and down, round and around, wild, like never knew what it was going to look like. And so I think being a consistent version of myself, first off, like they know what they're going to get with me. And I've openly shared on here my struggles on being like super open to newcomers, and I'm trying to get better at that. But hey, they knew what version they were going to get. It wasn't going to be a whirlwind. They didn't have to guess what I was going to look like, or how I was going to communicate to them or treat them or anything any day. And that's all I can do to carry that into the group setting, you know. And if everybody does that, then it's a safe place. They know what they're going to get. They know what the meeting is going to be like. It's that atmosphere we create. And so having that comfortable, you know what you're walking into. You know what I mean? We aren't flipping tables, throwing chairs at each other, unless it's a business meeting night. But regular meetings, we avoided all that. So yeah, man, just walking in there and kind of showing what recovery looks like. And the last thing would just be being honest and sharing my own experience. Like, don't forget what it was like walking in there, like sharing my experience about that, and not jazzing it up to make it sound like life is always perfect right now, because it's hard to relate to that when you're new. So sharing, hey man, I still struggle too. You know, that's all I got.
Thanks, Chase. You got something, Mason?
Yeah, I was just going to add in that, you know, to go along with what everybody else is saying, I just want to add to that is inclusion. Inclusion is key, not making people earn their membership and earn their place to get inside the circle, if that makes any sense, right? Like, hey, I see you, you're here. You know, if you come back for 6 months, maybe we'll invite you out to go do A, B, and C. You know, if I'm going to do things outside of the fellowship that I'm including a bunch of members in, why not include the newest people? You know, not making people say, hey, I need to see you here for X amount of days. I need you to have a sponsor. I need you to be working steps. I need you to be what I consider clean. All these checklists to get inside of my circle. Right, like including those people, including them in service. Okay, you don't have the clean time requirements to hold this position. You want to be on my subcommittee. Hey, I know you don't really care about this stuff, but would you like to ride with us and go to, you know, this workshop, or you know, you want to come with us to go hear this speaker? You know, that's what made me feel secure, is being included in things, and the way that people, and look, I'm saying this from a place of, you know, I've not been perfect at this practice. You know, this is something that I spin it around and on me and think about, like, how did I feel rooted and secure? It was by being included. People include me in things. Inviting me out to go eat afterwards, and then if I didn't have the money, they paid for it, inviting me to go bowling and doing different things like that. So for me, inclusion.
I like that a lot, Mason. And I think that it's something else I like about this question. A number of the other ones that we're getting into is that although this IDT is on DRT and MAT, these are really things that apply universally in NA for when new people are coming in, and it really just goes across the board. And that's what I try to do is, reach out to people that are new and take an interest in them and talk to them and introduce myself. Because I know, we were all new at some point in time, right? So we know what it was like first coming into a meeting. And that's just it's just such a really, important thing. And that's one thing that I like personally about my home groups on the smaller side, probably as far as most people are concerned. We have, I think recently, like 20 to 25 people that attend. We had for a long time less than 10 people that attended that meeting. Sunday morning at 9 a.m. is not prime time for a lot of people to be going to a meeting, but because the home group that I'm in is of that size, for the most part, I know who's been there before, right? I show up to my home group every week. The only time I'm not there is if I'm out of town or there's something really, really, really big going on. So I know who's been there before, who I've talked to before, that kind of thing. So I always try to go up and introduce myself to somebody who's new. And sometimes it's that I walk up to them and I introduce myself and ask them how long they've been going to meetings or whatever. And I find out they've got 30 years clean and they're from a neighboring area and it's somebody I haven't met before and they were traveling out of town for a meeting. Or, I've had the pleasure of being in my home group and talking to someone and they say, this is my first ever Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And like that's something really special too, because I feel like I don't come across people like that all the time where like this is their first exposure to NA, and I want to talk to them and I want to ask them if what they're looking for out of this thing or what their experience has been so far, if they have been to some meetings and everything like that. So it's just such a universal thing. The principles apply across the board, even though we're talking about them kind of specifically with this topic. All right, so let's move on and then we're going to get to some other questions here. So our third tradition offers relief from reservations we might have about membership and about each other. And that's a quote from the Guiding Principles book, page 59. We are accustomed to thinking about how we make people feel welcome at their first meetings, but we need to go deeper and consider what it means to move from someone who goes to some meetings sometimes to being a member of NA. We've talked about what helped us make that transition. How do we help other addicts take root here? And that leads us into our next discussion questions that we have here. And the first of those is, as a program of complete abstinence, how do we help people feel included enough to be able to choose whether to be an NA member? Go ahead, Jace.
Yeah, so this is I don't know, kind of a difficult question, but what immediately popped in my mind, like my experience. So, I gotta ask myself, am I talking about being a member of the NA Fellowship or being a member of the NA program? Because I started showing up and going to meetings because I was in when I first came back into the rooms this time and got clean. Because I bounced in and out for a long time, but never really did anything. I attended some meetings here and there. But I was in a program where I had to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. And so I was coming around and I was showing up. And right when I kind of got in, I asked the guy to sponsor me. And immediately he told me to do a couple things and I started doing it. And for me, like actually doing something that was suggested of me kind of like internally solidified me like, all right, like, yeah, I'm doing this shit this time. And really when that like really took hold was on, I'll never forget the feeling. I can only remember one little thing we talked about, but when I worked my first step with my sponsor this time, the first time, and like completing that, I'm like, damn, I just like really completed a step with a sponsor. Like, what the fuck's really going on? You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's when I was like locked in, pedal to the floor, didn't look back. Like, I would call 2 weeks later saying, hey, next one's done. When are we getting together? You know what I mean? So that was it for me, is when I felt a part of it was when I actually It's kind of the little, I'm sure it's everywhere else, but kind of little saying that trickled down through my sponsorship family is come with us and do what we do. And when I finally went with them and did what they did is when I fell apart of. Question at the end of the back to the basics on the first step is what reservations do I have about the Narcotics Anonymous program today? And my reservation I wrote about was that I'm not capable. And I was told, well, motherfucker, you just sat here and did the first part of it. How are you not capable? And I was like, all right. It kind of made me feel like, all right, I'm in this finally. Yeah, that's what I got.
Thank you, Chase. And I know for me, when there's somebody who's coming in and they're new, and particularly like on this topic, if they share with me that they're on MAT or DRT and they're just coming around, I have the conversation with them about complete abstinence in NA, but I do it in a very respectful way and I do it in a compassionate way. I've seen people kind of, for whatever reason, handle that conversation like a really negative, aggressive kind of thing. And I think some of that might be fear-based. I guess I can't really know what's necessarily going on with someone else, but I've had a lot of really good success with talking to people. Just, I mean, straight up with them. I don't want to lie to them. I don't want to mislead them. I don't want to, I'm not sugarcoating it, but I'm also not doing the brutal honesty thing. And we talk about it, and sometimes people are very receptive to that. Sometimes people have a problem with it. I've had a number of people tell me, well, that's my opinion, and maybe I shouldn't be spreading my opinion around. And if that's the kind of response that I get, typically I'll let them know, like, we have some literature on this. We talked about that earlier, about the literature that we do have written that touches on some of this on the subject and also the subject of abstinence in NA. And I'll sit down with them and we'll look at it. And especially if we do something like that, I've had such good results afterwards because I think it helps people to really understand that this is not a, it's not a personal attack on anybody. We're not trying to make anybody feel less than or apart from or whatever else. It's just, NA is a program and it is the way that it is, and that's where we're at, And then I personally with some of my experience and then some things that, I don't choose who I sponsor, but I've been able to sponsor some people that have been on MAT or DRT, have made a decision to get off of it, and then have had, have stayed Narcotics Anonymous and have the experience, So I get to talk to some people and say, hey, I sponsor a guy with 9 years clean who came in when he was on these things and he came off of it. Now he's worked through the steps multiple times. We work traditions, we work concepts, he's involved in service, he goes to meetings regularly. Let me go introduce you to this guy that I sponsor, So I've had just really good results with that kind of thing. And again, it just goes back to some of what we talked about before, being respectful with people, and trying to create a welcoming atmosphere and an atmosphere of recovery before, during, and after the meeting. Mason.
Yeah, so I to me it's I thought about the reading just for today, and one of those sentences is I will have faith in someone in NA who believes in me and wants to help me in my recovery. So to me, I have got to get over my fears and insecurities and believe in this fellowship and remember that if an addict like me can get clean, any manifestation of a person in addiction can find this path. So I have to have faith in not only the program, but the rest of you. So my key thing is let's just focus on getting you to that place to where you want to be a member, and reassure what the third tradition talks about. There's not a clean time requirement on the third tradition. Now I'm a believer that anybody, you're a member when you say you are. But each individual has got to find their own process of feeling like a member, and you're not going to feel like a member until you act like one. But that's not what the question's asking. The question's asking, where, how do I make people feel included enough to be able to choose whether to be an NA member by reassuring them that there is no requirement for membership? And I can, my part in that is living that part of the third tradition in my own life. By not casting judgment, by not acting by like somebody who's on MAT or DRTs is got some kind of sickness that I'm like some kind of sickness that I'm going to catch by including them in all the things that I would include anybody in, and reassuring. Like, I don't even think the conversation of complete abstinence, if we're talking about membership, I don't think that's the first thing that would come to my mind. Hey, wait a minute, are you how much clean time you got? Like, I know in our home group, it's like, hey, if you want to be a member, here's the card, here's the box, come up and see the chairperson. You're a member when you say you are, And I there's a lot of things that we've not done well as far as making people on MAT or DRT in the past feel welcome. And I think it was just from ignorance, And so I'm grateful that we have these IDTs at least to bring about these type of discussions and to bring some awareness. And my God, like Jason and RJ, your experience, man, that's testament enough. Like, I'm a results guy. My big thing of against people that would have been on MAT or DRT would be, well, it doesn't work. There's no hope. But that, you guys are living proof that there is hope. You've already shared your experience. There are people out there. So my other thing would be getting that person who's on that in touch with somebody like one of you guys to say, hey, I've been there. I got through this. We went back to the what the survey said. 82% of people stayed in NA because of identification with other addicts. And this is a universal program. The symbol talks about it. It's got room for all of us. And nobody's so unique that you can't find a path to recovery. But, anyways, those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Mason. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, and kind of to go off what Mason was just saying, like I share my experience and strength and hope about my personal, like that I have a lot more freedom than I did when I was using Matt in a bunch of different ways, like I don't have to worry about like going on a vacation because like you can't go to some countries because if you're on certain kinds of meth treatment, like they don't let you go to take methadone with you to certain places. And most of the time you're getting like I got, even though I was on Suboxone, I got it from a clinic. And so I had to go every week. And that was like another thing that that helped me get off of it was I wanted to move and I didn't want to go through another 5 hour orientation at a meth clinic. And so that helped, it's like just talk about like the freedom that not the practical freedom of not having to like worry about getting your script or losing it or having to get sick from not taking it, and then just the freedom of being able to work that much more on yourself, and everywhere that NA can take you.
Thanks, Jason. Francis, you're up.
Yeah, I was listening to Mason like around the third tradition, and actually we do have a requirement, and it's desire, but it's not anybody's. It's not between a Narcotics Anonymous or me and that member. It's that's between them and their higher power. It works how and why says desire is not a measurable commodity. It lives in the heart of each individual member because we can't judge the sole requirement for membership. We are encouraged to open wide the doors of our meetings to any addict who wishes to join. We are asked to extend to others the care and concern that helped each of us find a sense of belonging. The third tradition helps NA grow by encouraging us to welcome others. And so, yeah, I'm always on the lookout, like Chris was talking about watching for newcomers. Like I just watch for anybody that I don't recognize. And like I like to welcome people from out of town. I'll even like call them out. Like, hey, do you guys want to share? I'm tired of listening to all these motherfuckers. We got some fresh information right here from this out of town visitor. And you're like, so like how am I making people welcome? Mason was talking about the writing of the basic text. There was somebody that got involved with less than 30 days clean. She went to the World Convention subcommittee to get a position, and they wouldn't take her. And then she went over to the Literature Committee, and they took her as the secretary. And she was, other than Bo S., she was the only other person that went to all seven literature conferences. You know, like she had like a couple of years clean by the time the basic text came out. And you know, like, and she was the most trusted person. You know, like she was trusted with the, you know, like with the draft of the basic text to take it home. So you know, like, I'm not counting newcomers out. You know, like I try not to judge people based on their time. You know, like I want to develop relationships with people. I'll take their number and call them. You know, like we give people phone lists. I'm like, give us a call. No, I'm gonna fucking take your number and I'm gonna call and text you and try to get you to come back. That might be kind of, that might be predatory behavior, Chase, but you know, like I'm coming for you, newcomer. You know, like I want you to keep coming back. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Francis. RJ.
Man, I really I was in touch with like what Mason was saying, and I really think it's like as simple as just including people, right? Including addicts. And I mean, I think the answer is in the question itself. And the thing is like we come from pretty shitty places in life, right? Like we didn't come to NA because we had things going on. You know what I mean? Like we came to NA because like we had nowhere else to fucking go. And I just keep coming back to this idea. Like imagine coming into a meeting and they say you can't come to this meeting because you're on DRT. It sounds absurd, right? Right. But at the end of the day, like, what are we talking to newcomers? Like, when we start telling them that they can't do something or they can't be a part of or something like that because of DRT, MAT, smoking crack, whatever. And I don't know, man. I feel like there's something to be said as just as simple as including somebody, you know, whether it's going out to eat, whether it's going to another meeting, whether it's, you know, helping clean up after the meeting. I mean, can you imagine being told you can't help clean up chairs because you didn't have 30 days clean? Right. So I think a lot of times, like, we just keep it simple, man. And the more we try to convolute it and the more we try to analyze it and overanalyze it, the more it just becomes further and further away. And it really is just simple as just including the next addict, you know? Thanks.
Thank you, RJ. And with that, let's go into the next question that we have here, which we've touched on quite a bit already. So we'll see if anybody else has any additional thoughts on it. How do we help each other understand membership and take root in NA? Go ahead, Mason.
You know, I think we can just do better at overemphasizing what the requirements are. Even though Francis wanted to call me out a minute ago because I said there were no requirements, but what does desire mean? Just like Francis pointed out a minute ago, it's not measurable, which means that, and that unfortunately, I think a lot of new people leave the meetings because they don't come enough to understand what the third tradition says. See, I've been here long enough now. I know ain't none of you getting rid of me, 'cause you don't have the right to tell me that. But the people that are new do not understand that when we come in. So how do we get that message across would be my question. How do we make people understand that I can't measure your desire, so there's never a time when I can tell you that you're not welcome. There's never a time when I can say you're not worthy of membership because of A, B, or C. It's just not. I can't determine desire. It's not measurable. So that's all I got.
Thanks, Mason. Chase, you're next.
Yeah, what I think it's what comes to mind for me is simply just taking the 20 seconds it takes to explain that, like in a format. I remember, you know, at a business meeting, you're ready to just get the shit show started, get through all of it, rush it. Like nobody wants to sit there and go over stuff for 2 hours. But a couple years back, we made a, you know, positions rotating, our new secretary that came in like did an excellent job of slowing down at the beginning of a business meeting. We would ask, is there anybody here for their first business meeting, and saying, hey, look, It's your first business meeting. Like, ask questions. Like, you have a right to vote. Like, you don't have to know what the fuck you're talking about. Like, you get a vote. You get a say in here. Like, your voice matters just as much. And he took the time, and it took 30 seconds, 45 seconds to get that across instead of just taking for granted that, well, they'll figure it out or they'll know. But, like, does it really take that much time to slow down and just explain it? You know what I mean? So I think making it a point to do so, and not looking at it as an inconvenience. Obviously at some point we kind of learned to explain it, but somebody had to show us, I'm sure. We don't really come to the realizations, and so just make it, making it more easy and more accessible. That's something that's very easy to do.
Thanks, Chase. Mason, back to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in real quick because Chase made me think about something. Another thing that is key in this, I think, is a practice. I can't speak for all areas. I used to do that. I used to think that our meeting in our area was just like everywhere else, and it's not. But one practice that I don't hear a lot of anymore is group inventories. Taking a group inventory. I think it's in a guide to local service. There's some prompt questions on how you can take a group inventory, maybe adding this to your group inventory. These questions in particular right here, how do we help each other understand membership and take root? So if you could add this into like your group inventory as a group, I think those that could be extremely beneficial. But yeah, that's it.
Thanks, Mason. And what I think I'm hearing is, how much time are we taking to really focus on these principles with people in NA, especially new people, And there's a group in my area, it was my previous home group, where they read this from the basic text from the third tradition at the beginning of every meeting. It was a part of their what we call a secretary around here, the secretary reading. They read membership in Narcotics Anonymous is not automatic when someone walks in the door or when the newcomer decides to stop using. The decision to become a part of our fellowship rests with the individual. Any addict who has a desire to stop using can become a member of NA. We are addicts and our problem is addiction, And that was included because we wanted people to know, because there's not, that's not really talked about much either, that you can come to Narcotics Anonymous and decide not to be a member if you don't want to. Just because you have a desire to stop using and you end up meeting somehow, you're not stuck here if you don't want to be. Now, there might be some other forces playing a role, in your life, as far as why you're attending meetings, but we wanted to get that information out there to people, so we put that in there, And I always have the kind of the phrase like, desire is not a measurable commodity, And I don't know if that exact wording is in our literature anywhere, but I guess I heard it or I read it somewhere or whatever it was, and that's what always floats around in my head. So it doesn't matter. The guy that comes in and he's already clean and he's all gung-ho about coming to meetings and being of service or whatever, or the guy sitting in the back who's been on methadone for 30 years, I can't judge either one of their desire to stop using. That's not on me. That's a personal choice for them to make. And it's an honest program in the sense of like, I'm going to take people for face value and what they're telling me, because I have no other way of determining that kind of thing. Go ahead, Chase.
Yeah, real quick, just something that popped in my head, I've seen people like new guys at meetings, like when it comes key tag time, we're talking about handing out like the white, they're like well, unsure what it is. And there was a guy that was in our home group when I got clean. He would always, when he would do key tags, he was like, look, this white key tag, we all start here. If you maybe you have a desire, maybe you want to stop, but this key tag commits us to you and not you to us. And like really driving, like this didn't say in like you're locked into some agreement, but we're now locked in an agreement with you. I think really kind of hammering that out. That the longer I think about that, the longer I've been here, like, man, what a profound thing of what he's really saying with that.
Yeah, it's really good. Thank you, Chase. And we're gonna move on here. We're coming down to the home stretch with this.
Oh, hey,
Sure.
Chris.
Go ahead, Francis.
I just read out of the It Works on why the desire is not a measurable commodity.
Is that
Yeah,
where it is? Okay.
that's where you
There's
heard
some
it.
stuff rattling around in my head up here, that's good. Thank you for letting me know about that. So the next section in here says, in the third tradition, It Works How and Why reminds us that the group is not the jury of desire. No addict should be denied an opportunity to stay long enough to develop that desire. We can nurture that desire with loving acceptance. It also tells us that we are encouraged to open wide the doors of our meetings to any addicts who wishes to join. Any addict who wishes to join, we are asked to extend to others the care and concern that helped each of us find a sense of belonging. We close this discussion with a couple of questions. And I think Francis read that quote, whether it was knowingly or not, earlier on here. So the next question that we have is, how do we make space for a newcomer to surrender, even if it takes a long time? Mason.
I think we heard an example tonight, something that somebody may be uncomfortable with, but getting out of your comfort zone. I just think about what Jason's story would be had Francis said, "Hey man, I really just do not sponsor people that are on that," and just said, "You'll have to find somebody else." Maybe it's letting go of some of these preconceived notions of what it's supposed to mean to allow ourselves to help somebody else. Making people check boxes to deserve my type of help. Like, oh, I can't help you if you do this, or like you have to get off of this in a certain amount of time, or yada yada yada. I think it's letting down some of these preconceived ideas, because there's nowhere in our fellowship or in our literature that I'm aware of that says there's requirements on sponsorship and different things like that. Policy and procedures are very much made by individuals and addicts inside their groups and things like that. Like, our literature is very cut and dry on people who deserve help, and that's anybody who's asking for it. But yeah, that's all I got.
Yeah, and I think that it's, important too that we welcome people and we tell them to keep coming back regardless of what they have going on, whether it's that they haven't made a decision to get clean or they're still struggling with that, or they made a decision that that's what they want to do, but they continue to relapse, And I mean, I think it's important that we let people know about this program and like that the program works best when you keep coming back and when you come back clean. Like that's how we're going to get the best results, but in the meantime, however you're coming back, we're gonna love you and we're gonna treat you with respect and welcome you here, and you are welcome, And I've also had good experiences with people maybe kind of in a position like that, and introducing them to some other members of the program who it took them a long time to surrender. There are people that bounce in and out for a long time sometimes before they pick up that 1 year medallion. So if I can get them in touch with someone who's got that experience, that may be able to help them out, even more, so I can point them in that direction if I don't have that experience myself. I think that who was up? Was it RJ was up first? I think so. Is that right or no?
I don't know. I can go. It doesn't
Okay, go
matter.
ahead, RJ. Yeah, you're good.
So making space for the newcomer to surrender. I mean, I think we do what was done for us, essentially. You know what I mean? We teach them about the program. We introduce them to Narcotics Anonymous in a kind and loving way. And at the same time, like, we let them have their own organic experience, right? So I think at the end of the day, like, nobody could tell me when I was ready to surrender. Nobody could tell me when I was done taking Suboxone. Nobody could tell me when I was going to be done, using drugs in one form or another. Like, that surrender ultimately came down to this organic experience that I had through the process of recovery. And I can't take that away from anybody, So what I can do is I can introduce them to the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I can introduce them to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous and, like, allow them to make that decision for themselves. I mean, ultimately, isn't that like what the first step gives us? Is that decision that we no longer need to use drugs anymore? So, I don't know. I think, like, we just allow them the space. You know what I mean? Like, we allow them to have that process for themselves, but, like, in a loving way while guiding them through the 12, through the 12 steps ultimately. So, if that makes sense. Thanks.
Thanks, RJ. Let's go to Jason next.
Yeah, and I think like one of the things that helped me was Francis didn't have experience with Matt treatment himself, but he had experience. Like he talked to me about how he had to surrender to smoke, quit smoking cigarettes. He shared his something that was like very difficult for him to quit, that while he was in the fellowship. Like that. and that it took him a long time to do it, and it was you would quit and you'd start again, and you'd quit and start again, and like kind of like what Chase was saying earlier, like talk about how things aren't always easy even in recovery, and that because I mean we all have things that we like I still have a lot of things I need to surrender, I might have surrendered some things, but I still take my will back on a daily basis on some things, so like just share that, we all struggle with things all the time, and that, that we're here for them when they struggle with this.
Thank you, Jason. Chase.
Yeah, I think something I try to be conscious of is not, it's a lack of judgment, really, but not making those people feel isolated. You know what I mean? Like, and that can come down with just the words I use. Like, instead of saying, like, well, what are you going to do this time, motherfucker? You know what I mean? Like, I try to be really, like, it's always, well, what can we do? What are we going to do? You know, it's we. And I try to make them feel like they're not on an island by themselves, and let them just keep coming back. And I think something that I could do a better job of, and that I've seen our little area could do better. And I picked it up; it kind of stuck out to me. I was listening to the episode that actually dropped today. Nicolette sharing her experience, and she said recovery had to be fun for her. And what are we showing people? Is it always just fucking morbid by the book, strict, serious, or is there a fun environment that they can walk into? Because that's a lot more enticing to stick around in, So what are we? What's the vibe we're giving off? So what do I have control over? What vibe am I giving off? And am I going to isolate somebody or try to make myself a part of their journey? If that makes sense.
Awesome. Thanks, Chase. And let's move into our last question, our last discussion question that we have for today. And that's going to be how can we set aside some of our own fear and judgment about members who come in on DRT or MAT to focus on helping addicts find a home in NA?
For me personally, I think I just need to discover what's really my business and what's not. My thoughts on this have changed drastically over time, and a lot of it's what Chase was said, and a lot of, my feelings have always been so entangled with what you were going to think, like you in the fellowship, what other people were going to think, what the old timer was going to think, who's stuck in their ways, what are they going to talk about, so. Letting go a lot of that stuff and focusing on like, what's my lane and what's my purpose? My purpose is our purpose to carry the message to the addict who still suffers, regardless of what manifestation of addiction that they're in. And look, I can look at my own manifestations. If I want to get up on my high horse and think that people are different than me, my God, we could do a whole nother episode on what I still struggle with some time clean. Like, we could sit here all night. I have other things where the disease is active inside of my life. Like, things that I have am actively obsessing and compulsing about, though they're accepted, they're not as, intolerable as something else. But like literally, who am I to judge? So I think to answer this question is to focus on what we hear all the time. What is my inventory? Like, who are you? Who are you really? That's my input.
Thanks, Mason. Chase is next.
Yeah, Mason needs to get out of my head. I'll leave it short because that's exactly what it is. How do I do that? It's self-inventory. Look at myself and my, just because I'm doing it does not make it not as bad as what I feel like somebody else is doing. You know what I mean? Because there's many areas of my life that people could point out and be like, well, that's not, where's the program at in that? You know what I mean? And so how do I, anytime I'm judging somebody else, how do I get past that look at myself? It's really as simple as that for me.
Yeah, Francis.
I think you could just drop the whole DRT MAT thing out of the question. Is like, how can we set aside some of our own fear and judgment about members who come in, and to focus on helping addicts find home in NA? Like that goes for everything. Like that goes for, like they're like the only thing that I get tripped up on sponsorship is like if they're clients from my agency, like there's supposed to be like a gap between, like them doing treatment and them being a, like when can I sponsor somebody that seems to like me, like that I connected with as a counselor. And I tell them like, you know what, I can't sponsor you, but you know what, I could still support you and we could still be friends. And you're like, I just can't take that title, like, and I'll support you any way I can. But that's how I feel about everybody. Like, I feel like, like I want to encourage everybody to come back, everybody, and, like, I try not to put anything on it. I don't put my time on it. Like, I don't want to be separated from people because, like they're still using, like, I don't want to be separated from people because they have a different gender than me. Like, if for whatever reason they're coming at me for sponsorship, like, and that's against the rule, NA rules, that's not in the literature, like, I'll be fuck that. I'll do it. God's telling me to do it. Like, and that goes for MAT too. Like, I had reservations, like around sponsoring Jason, but you're like, fuck it. Let's check it out. Like, maybe this will work. Like, and so like, this is recovery is at the level of my willingness. You know what I mean? Like, and if it doesn't make sense, I'm probably still supposed to do it anyway. Like, because that's what willingness is and open-mindedness is like getting past like what I think and how I feel. Am I open-hearted? Am I open heart, not open-minded, but open-hearted for the addict? And that's what I hope to be. Thanks.
Thanks, Francis. Go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think honestly, a lot of the fear and judgment I have is ends up like, because I was like talking about earlier, like feeling conflicted about steering people that are on mat to NA. So, like, a lot of my fear and judgment more has to do with like, am I setting these people up? Am I setting these people up to have them walk into some place where they're going to feel guilt and shame, or someone's going to tell them that they're less than and stuff like that? And so it becomes more like, I've never told someone not to go to NA, but like I might steer them towards like, this is a really good meeting you should go to, or give them phone numbers of people I know that are going to be loving and accepting towards them, rather than just like, oh, like, yeah, sure, go to whatever meeting you want to. And like, obviously that's their choice. They can go meet whoever they want. But like I try to just, my fear and judgment is more towards like that, like not towards like what's going to happen if we let mad people come into our meetings and share or sponsor them or whatever like that. It's more towards like what's going to happen to these people if they meet the wrong person in NA that's going to chase them out of the room, not like actually physically, but that's going to tell them that, they're not really clean. And I mean, I get that that's, that's the position and kind of an A, it's an outside issue, but it's also, abstinence. But, cause I know people that left and then died, and like, I never want to be responsible for that. So that's kind of where my fear and judgment comes in, honestly, more than the other way.
Thanks, Jason, and everyone else. That was a lot of really good stuff. And I think Mason and Chase touched on particularly with doing like, the self inventory, and looking at this, because where if I'm dealing with some fear and judgment on this, where is that coming from? What is that rooted in? And what do I need to look at with that? And I think Jason might have mentioned a little bit, but I think for some people, and through conversations I've had with people, some of that comes from being afraid that a bunch maybe a bunch of people on MAT are going to come in, and then the definition of clean time in NA is going to change or something, And I think that was what my experience was at attending one of these workshops. Well, it wasn't that, but it was about somebody addressing that. The person who was facilitating the workshop at the beginning said, "Look," essentially said, "Look, let's get something straight. We're not talking about changing the definition of total absence or complete absence in NA. It's about talking about how to welcome members, And if I do have some fears about that, and that's what I'm going through, maybe I need to sit back and look at having a little bit of faith, and trust in the program. This program that's been here for what, 71 years, going on 72 years, like that things are going to be okay. And we're gonna figure out how to address these things. We're gonna keep it moving, and we're not letting the outside world dictate what's going on in Narcotics Anonymous. But it's like it talked about in here. We do need to acknowledge what's going on in the outside world and understand how that may put people in a different position that are walking in our doors, or may amplify something that's already been going on. But now we're gonna see it even more than what we had before. Go ahead, RJ.
I mean, I feel like I look at like where we are. I'm trying to think about how to word this. Like, the drugs aren't the same right now, you know what I mean? And the level of deaths that people are suffering from overdoses from fentanyl, all the other new stuff that's out there. My wife works in treatment, and I swear she comes home every week with, "Oh, people are now doing this. People are now doing that. People are now doing this." And I swear every time she brings something up, it's even worse and worse and worse. And like, for me personally, at the end of the day, like, I can't afford the judgment. You know what I mean? I can't afford somebody coming in here and being turned away because of being on MAT or DRT or whatever you want to call it, because of like an ego inflation or a conflict of interest, or however you want to look at it. And at the end of the day, like, it goes back to our primary purpose. What is our primary purpose in Narcotics Anonymous? And that's to help the addict who still suffers. So if somebody's on MAT or DRT, do they not suffer the same as we do? You know what I mean? Do they not get the chance to come into Narcotics Anonymous and hear the message and participate? Oh, you only get that when you get off of the substance. You know what I mean? So, for me, like, I really try and keep it at the forefront of like, what is my primary purpose? And then drop those that ego. I mean, I really feel like it comes down to an overinflated sense of ego. So that's all I got. Thanks.
Thank you, RJ. And I'm just gonna read through this last little bit here that we have. So there's some information about where anybody who's listening that's interested in accessing this information or submitting, some of their own feedback. It says, please share your ideas about the topic and resources to address it by filling out the form on www.na.org/survey. And then, this format that we use, which was adjusted just a little bit, it can be found at www.na.org/IDT. And there's other IDTs that are up there as well. And I think Mason mentioned that earlier. So, and I just want to take a quick minute just to thank Mason and Francis for putting this episode together. Francis, for his idea to do this in general and allowing me to participate to the degree that you've had. I've had a really good time with this. And I think that we really got into a lot of things on here that are going to be really beneficial for a lot of people. And I know if for nobody else, it was beneficial for me, so that's always a great thing. So thank you guys for that.
What a great episode this has been. I know that towards the end of each episode, we're either saying, hey, you got a burning desire, or do you got a message for the newcomer? And I almost feel like there's been a message for the newcomer throughout this whole episode about, you know what, keep coming. We love you. Don't let anybody chase you out. The only requirement is desire. And that's not between you and NA, that's between you and God. So keep coming, keep coming, keep coming. I think Mason has something too.
No, I was just going to say this has been wonderful. And I even told Francis, like, this is like down the schedule as far as we already have things that are recorded and set to release. But I told Francis, I sent Francis a message a few minutes ago, and I said, "I'm releasing this ASAP. Like, we got to get this out there." This was incredible. So I just want to thank Chris for facilitating this, Jason and RJ Chase for your participation and coming in here and really being honest. And my last thought would be, I just look back and I imagine how it must have felt when addicts were looking for a place to go, and they had found AA, and the place, some of the spaces that they had found themselves in was not welcoming because of identification. And like, we always kind of look at AA as like a parent, and I just hope that We're not like that individual that says, "Oh, I swear I'm not going to be like my parents did me. You know, I'm not going to do the things my parents did." I hope we have the experience to look back at how those addicts must have felt and say, "Hey, we have this experience to look at in our history." I think that's why Francis is, or one of the reason Francis and I are so keen on history too, is because there's a lot of information that's out there. You know, we just got to find it. So I hope that, you know, in these kind of discussions show that we don't want to become that place. Like if an addict is not safe in Narcotics Anonymous, where the hell else can they go? Like, where else? What's the other option? You know, we are the light. It's even in our reading for the, we've tried everything, medicine, religion, psychiatry. We're the last stop on the block for a lot of people. So we want to make sure that we're an option for everyone. And yeah, I think that's all we got. Francis and I, we hope to discuss some more of these IDTs. I think this format's great and it's going to help a lot of people. And we'll be back next week with another episode. We will see y'all then.
Thank you for joining us on our Living Clean podcast. This is another platform that we can share our message of recovery, which is an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Join that no matter what club. You can contact us through text. The number is 931-306-9364.